And welcome to the third of our three-part podcast series on survey methods with Ipsos UK and the Office for National Statistics. I'm Eileen Irvin and I sit within our Survey Research Methods Centre at Ipsos UK. And today we're going to be talking about accessibility and how we can make sure that our surveys are as accessible as possible to as many people as possible when we're designing and running surveys. So I'm very pleased today to welcome Andy McEwen, who is Chair of the Ipsos Accessibility Working Group, and Tanya Lidstone, who is Head of User Experience here at Ipsos. So welcome you both to the podcast and thank you for joining me. So just to start, I guess it's a very broad question, Andy, but what do you mean when you talk about accessibility?
Well, I think you kind of summed it up really nicely just now, but accessibility is about making something easy to use for as many people as possible. So in research, this often covers information on websites, survey tools and reports. And it's about ensuring that someone is not prevented from taking part, accessing or understanding research on the basis of disability. And then in a wider sense, accessibility is also about removing barriers to participation for everyone, such as those who speak English as a second or other language, or people with poor access to the internet.
And Tanya, when you're kind of working in user experience, what impact do you see of making our research accessible?
Well, the benefits are just manifold. From a team perspective, that sense of gaining empathy, awareness and understanding is incredible from witnessing and seeing how people interact with products and services. And also from the client perspective, being able to see that as well. It really fosters a sense of community and understanding and a sort of problem-solving instinct as well, to go away and make those things happen. So from that then becomes much more creativity and innovation to try and create solutions for those problems. But equally, from a business point of view, it has a massive impact for our clients. It can obviously increase their revenue because they're being able to access people that they haven't been able to before. You're also looking at creating a much more robust platform or design experience, which means that when you really get all that coding right, which you need for really good accessible products and services, it's easier to grow and scale because you've got all of those sort of foundational things sorted out. So that's really important. And the other thing as well is that if you get a lot of your coding right, it does improve your search engine optimization, which I wouldn't use as the key reason to look at accessibility, but it's definitely a definite upside for clients when they do make sure they get all those things sorted out.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things we've been talking about in this podcast series is respondent-centred design and that approach to surveys where you put the respondent at the centre of your design. And I think accessibility is really fundamental to that, because if we're putting our respondent at the centre of the design, we need to make sure they can access our research, access our survey and take part. So I think it's something that we can all learn from, but all be doing better. So I guess to start with, it'd be good to think about some examples of where we have managed to do that and where we have embedded inclusive design and the impact it had. So I know, for example, in as I was talking about respondent-centered design, the work that's been done by the Office of National Statistics to transform the labour force survey has been really trying to underpin that with accessibility and think about that kind of from the start. I guess at Ipsos we've also got some examples too. So Andy, do you want to give an example you've been working around?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one example that really stands out here is the GP patient survey. So this is an annual survey run by Ipsos on behalf of NHS England. And the survey goes out to around 2.6 million patients aged 16 and over across the UK. And it asks people questions on how they feel about their GP practice. So the results from the survey are published on the GPPS website. Those results are published in different formats, such as a lookup tool that shows responses for specific GP practices. But there's also a dashboard that allows people to extract data directly and, you know, with a bit more scope for doing their own analysis. But in terms of accessibility, the yeah, I focused on GPPS because there's a number of features that it has that improves the access, the accessibility of the study overall. So that's covering, we're thinking about both taking part in the survey as well as accessing the results. So these features include, well, the survey can be completed in different formats according to individuals' access requirements. So that covers modes such as online, returning the survey by post, or completing the survey by telephone. The content for GPPS is written in language that's easy to understand. So that is, well, we would refer to that as plain English, and we've worked closely with the Plain English campaign to get to that standard. So they've supported us with reviewing the letters and the questionnaires that go out to participants. So any communications basically about GPPS are, you know, done to that plain English standard. Alongside this, or, you know, building on this, the survey is also translated into British Sign Language and 14 other languages. And it's also available in large print and braille on request. And then finally, the information sheet includes guidance on how participants can complete the survey by telephone. So it's not just about having that telephone option, but having clear guidance on how people can complete the survey by telephone, which I think is really important. The thing that really sets GPPS out as a good example of accessible research, however, is the accessibility page on the GPPS website. So this page just outlines how it makes the survey accessible for as many people as possible. So this includes more features like guidance on changing the web page settings to suit individuals' access needs. So that includes functionalities such as changing the color contrast, the size of the font on the web page, and then also guidance on how to navigate web pages using a keyboard or screen reader technology. And then the other thing about the accessibility page is it also details just like where there are any gaps or limitations on accessibility. That's as a feature that's really important for users, because it just demonstrates what the project can and can't offer in terms of accessibility, and removes any uncertainty for individuals who want to complete the survey.
Yeah, I think at GPPS, because of the scale of it, has had to invest in making and the topic has had to really invest in making sure that it does take into account the variety of needs of the people who will be accessing it. And as you say, I think it's a pretty standout example in terms of what it's been able to do in terms of survey. I guess the other thing about that survey is that it also uses our kind of online survey tool, which has quite a lot of accessibility features built in. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that.
At Ipsos, we've been doing a lot of work over the last couple of years to raise the standard on our the accessibility of our web pages, and that's been built into GPPS now. We've gone through a process where we have had our accessibility of Ipsos web pages audited by an external accessibility experts, and they working with them, we've understood like where we're getting it right on our functionality that we offer on our web pages, and where the development areas are as well, and then so by understanding those two sides of the coin, we've been able to raise the overall standard of our accessibility for on our web pages.
I think it's been quite noticeable, and I think particularly for the online survey tool, having things like the reassurance that things work with screen readers, and being able to change font sizes and background colours and things to make them work for different requirements. I think often the best design with those things is the bigger the variety, the better. It's about making sure it works for different people.
Exactly, I think that's the key thing. Like, there's no one way of doing accessibility, of making something like a web page or a survey tool accessible. It depends on individuals' specific access requirements, and that, as we said, like GPPS is such a good example of how, with the right investment of resources and time spent thinking about it, bringing in the right people, we've been able to offer that in a meaningful way for people who are using the who are taking part in the study.
Definitely. And Tanya, have you got an example of embedding inclusive design into research projects?
Yes, a lot of our clients are in the financial services sector, and what we find is that people with disabilities rely on digital services in order to be able to complete, buying things, applying for things. So a lot of our clients are looking at things like processes, applications, and we all know with the best will in the world that any application can be pretty tedious and difficult. And this particular client wanted to see what it was like for people that were blind or had low vision. So this is looking at assistive technology and screen readers. And it was really fascinating because we obviously worked with people that were blind and had low disability. And we asked them to try and complete this application, which it was a prototype, so it was a very early design. And we just tried to ask them to apply, in this case, it was for a credit card. And being able to observe the barriers, the pain points, and the difficulty that people had really brought it home how, and in many ways, we're still a long way from being, coding in a way that allows screen readers to really perform, and the workarounds that these people had to go to in order to try and get through this application process was quite startling. It was things like drop-down menus not working with screen readers. It was error messages that didn't actually allow them to recover from the problems that they had found. And it was the most ridiculous sort of long terms and conditions that are being read out for, you can imagine, just on a reel for ages and ages. It just made it very difficult. And they were quite stressed by the end of the whole process. So we were able to take that away and look at where all those key points were, where they were struggling, where there were important things that needs to be changed. We had to sort of look at all the design guidelines. We had to look at the framework for the whole flow of how that worked and redesign it. But doing that and bringing them back and then being able to play it back through the screen reader and assistive tech again showed that then it was a much easier transition. They weren't as stressed. They weren't as upset. They felt they'd been listened to as well, which was incredibly important. And we had a much more streamlined service. But the important thing about that was that not only were we solving for the screen reader problem, but you could probably argue that elderly people and other people that maybe even had temporary impairments would find those solutions of benefit. And that's the key point with all of this, is that often when we're solving for these particular problems, we're also solving it for other user groups. And that's a really key aspect of what I guess we're all doing.
And I think one of the things that's very powerful about that example is about getting the people involved almost in the room or, in the story, saying to, you have this access need. Let's experience this through you and see see or experience what is happening for you as these things happen and what that means. And, I know there's kind of all sorts of different bits of work happening with that. I know there's some colleagues setting up an online community of people with access needs to specifically try and embed that more in some of our research and make sure we're sort of forefronting those voices. In terms of doing research in that way, how did you find doing research with people specifically with access needs, who we often might describe as kind of hard to reach groups or groups that are kind of lesser heard in research?
We're lucky at Ipsos because we do have access to panels with people that have various disabilities. And that obviously is not just about physical disabilities, it's also mental health issues as well that we have to take into consideration when we're looking at designing products and services. So we're lucky that we have those people that we can draw upon. And interestingly, a lot of our clients want to have show reels to show people back in their companies, look, this is what people are going through, because of what I raised earlier about that sense of creating empathy so we can really understand what those barriers are, what those pain points are. So all those things are incredibly important to really bring it home. And I defy anyone to not witness one of those, either the research itself or to watch the video and not feel motivated to want to do something to see the troubles that people go through in order just to things that we take for granted, you know, like application forms, like buying things, like understanding even product information on shampoo, things like that, that people just can't find easily. Or just being able to see that there are, when you arrive on a website or product, that there is a code or a label that you immediately recognize is for you, that allows you to make the different alterations that will help you use that website. When people see that and they realize it's speaking to them, it has such a powerful impact, because they realize this is a company that cares about them, that cares about social responsibility. And that immediately engenders a sense of loyalty as well. And these people obviously have great communities that they come from, and they will talk to other people about the experiences they've had. And so that is an incredible place that we can sort of tap into to really understand, well, who is the best of the best, who are the people that are doing great things in accessibility and inclusive design. So it's very rewarding, and it's great to work with clients and people that really want to make a difference, because unfortunately there is still a long way to go in the digital space to make things fully inclusive and fully accessible.
I guess the other thing in terms of that kind of engendering loyalty is, of course, you know, people with access needs are obviously, you know, service users and people who are buying products. But they're also people working in these companies. They're also people working in research and wanting to look at data and do all of those things. And I think there is also something around that recognition that actually making our research accessible is great for the people participating, but it's also better for the people who want to work in those industries trying to engage with research in the first place. As you say, it has those kind of very wide ranging needs, and improving that empathy throughout is can only be a good thing.
Definitely.
We're now coming towards the end. So if there is one thing you'd like to take the audience to take away about accessibility and inclusive design, I know it's a hard ask, what would it be? I'll start, so you've got a couple of seconds. So I think for me, it's about thinking about it from the start. If often we think about accessibility as a kind of afterthought at the very end of a project, and that's really not good enough. And if we think about things early enough, we can often do a lot more and embed things a lot earlier. And that's definitely made a big difference in the projects I've worked on. Tanya, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I'm going to build on that. I'm going to say two things, being a bit naughty. So one is, yes, absolutely, do it at the beginning, but equally just start, just do something, just, you know, get going, because making a start, it will snowball, you'll get support, and it will be incredibly rewarding and really important. I think one of the things, though, that's really key is that I think when people think about inclusive design or accessibility, and they think they're going to go to the lowest common denominator in order to simplify everything, but actually inclusive design doesn't mean that. What it is about designing a diversity of ways for people to access your products, not one way, many ways. And actually through doing that, everybody then has access to products and services. So it's not one way, it's many ways. And I think that actually is great for creativity, it's great for innovation, but it's brilliant in terms of making sure that we really are designing things for everybody.
And Andy, what's your one takeaway?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, very similar to both to yourselves. Like for me, it's about thinking about the people who are going to access the research in practice, either by you know, taking part in fieldwork or by accessing findings and research outputs at the end. So it's really important, if you're going to be building in accessibility measures and the functionality of various tools and outputs, that those measures and that functionality actually works for the people that you want it to work for. So to be doing that, it's really important to be, you know, rigorously testing the, you know, how you anticipate your research to be accessible. And so that involves speaking to the right people, but also even just like trying it yourself and seeing how that works as you go along. And then linked to that as well, just being very open about feedback from people who are testing the accessibility features that you have built into your projects, and being able to take that feedback and improve the accessibility features that you've got is so important, and ultimately benefits the people that you want it to work for.
Thank you. Thank you both. That's all we've got time for today. So thank you so much to Tania and Andy for being part of this podcast and for the very interesting conversation. And to our listeners, please do look out for the other podcasts in this three-part survey method series between Ipsos UK and the Office for National Statistics. So the first podcast looked at how we can use respondent-centred design when developing surveys. And the second one looked at agile methodologies for designing surveys. Hopefully they will also be of interest. So thank you for listening and goodbye.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.